As I can see, everybody pretty much knows who's here to speak, but it's a real privilege for me to welcome back Peter and to have him come and share with our group. He always has something great to say, and in the next couple of weeks, Peter and Chris are going to be going through the workshop. They're going to be actually presenting something that they presented up at the Wilson House in Vermont. So if you didn't get a chance to hear that, then you're lucky. They're going to be presenting it here. This week, it's just going to be Peter, and he's going to share about his experience, his story, and then the importance of spiritual growth and in his recovery. So without any further delay, I'll turn the meeting over to Peter.
Any Godfather fans out there? And when Michael Corleone was facing the Senate with this microphone, that's how I always feel when he's the no senator, I didn't do it. My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm grateful to be alive and sober in a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank all of you for being here. Need to be back at this group and hopefully share some good things and have some fun over the next few weeks with Chris and myself, and hopefully we get a lot of good questions. Chris and I are going to be alternating weeks. He'll be doing a couple of weeks. I'll be doing a couple of weeks, and we'll march through the 12 proposals and see where God takes us. Grateful to be here. God gave me a sober date of June 23rd, 1988, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. Living most days in the sunlight of the Spirit, living in all three sides of the triangle, experiencing the glory of God and doing all the work I need to do and I get to do in Alcoholics Anonymous to experience more of that. My home group is a Vision for You group. We meet Thursday nights in Union, New Jersey from 7:30 to 8:45, and I've shared this a million times from a podium that most people in my town don't like us, and we're ridiculed, and we're given a lot of ugly names because we talk about the big book Alcoholics Anonymous. And I meet many people on this path with the big book on their arm, bringing a big book into their home group, and some of the home groups are saying, why are you bringing that book in here? Why are you going to ruin a good thing? We don't want to talk about the solution or the steps, and don't talk about God because that person is new. And yet you come to a place like this, this particular group, where we have a lot of enthusiasm and excitement about this work. So I'll offer this at the very beginning. If you're going back to your area and talking about this book and talking about the experience you've had with the information in the book and it's met with resistance, continue to shout it from the rooftops. Continue to talk about the experience we're having from this book. Because if you're a real alcoholic like me and you've tried many other ways to recover, you know that this is the only solution in order to recover and get to a place called recovered, which I said at the opening, and anything less than that would be falsely humble. If I said I was recovering, I'd be lying to you, and I'm not going to lie to a group of alcoholics. If I said I was recovering, it would simply excuse a lot of inappropriate behavior for someone who's supposed to be walking on this path in the sunlight of the Spirit. And if I said I was recovering, I'd be denying the truth and the information in the big book Alcoholics Anonymous. And how can I do that when it's brought me to where I am? It'll be real easy to water down and gobble the message and get lots of applause from contemporary AA, and they'll say, what a great guy Pete is. But I get drunk on stuff like that. And I become sick on stuff like that. And God has moved me to where he has moved me, and I transmit what I have. And we can't transmit something we haven't gotten, and we will what we do. And sometimes that's a solution, and if we're untreated, it'll be untreated stuff too. So I've been moved to where I am. And I give this message away the way God allows me to give it away. And if I ruffle feathers along the way, that's okay. But anything less than the great fact, and maybe I'm not sharing a message from the big book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm held up to that every day. Am I sharing the information from the big book? Am I sharing anything less than the great fact? Is my home group sharing anything less than the great fact? God has given me this in abundance, and the last thing I would want to do is water it down and gobble it. And I was guilty of that when I was first getting sober because I wanted everyone to like me. I wanted the prospects to like me. And I wanted it for you more than you did. So I water it down or I ram it down your throat. And through a lot of inventory and a lot of resentments and a lot of anger and frustration, I got to a place where I give it away the way I give it away. And I have found through that, and I have found through the last 18 years, the great need to experience God, the great need to accept spiritual help, the great need to continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness and not rest on my laurels because I'm headed for trouble if I do. Because my ego, where my illness lives, which is driven by fear, wants nothing for me but to pick up a drink. Wants me dead will settle for me drunk, and it'll pretty up a junkyard to get me back there. And I've been in a place of knowing my truth. And I'm a real alcoholic, and my job is to continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And all I need is to suit up and show up to the altar, and God gives in abundance. My ego, after a while, wants to reemerge and tell me, you've done enough work, you don't need to continue, you're writing enough inventory, you make a lot of meetings, you have some prospects, you're going on these retreats, you're doing workshops, you really don't need to do anything else. And in that little crack in the armor is when the isms start to show up, and I start to run the show. And I'm wondering why I feel like I'm hitting a wall in Alcoholics Anonymous, why I feel stuck in prayer, why I feel stuck in meditation, why I feel blocked when I'm speaking to another person in Alcoholics Anonymous or out there. Page 52, instead of showing up occasionally, starts to show up regularly, and bedevilments become a working part of my day. Contemporary A will tell you, well, double up on your meetings. And all I do is gets very contagious. I make other people sick. So God has brought me through from a place of experiencing the bitter end in 1988 when he separated me from alcohol. And God separated me from alcohol. That's why I'm still separated. It's his grace that's been has kept me separated. 1988 separates me from alcohol. And it was an ugly separation, it was a violent separation, but I was moved away from that. And that journey began for me in the back of a hallway in 1988. And God showed up in the most sordid moment in my life and probably one of the most sordid spots in New York. God shows up in the back of a filthy hallway with a lot of people of my kind floating around. And I'm way in the back, and God shows up and interrupts my death that particular day and then places me here. And when I found out that God has taken me from that place to where I am tonight, from a place of incomprehensible demoralization to a place of recovered sitting here with dignity. And God was in charge of all of it, because if I was, I'd probably be drunk and you'd have another speaker tonight. But I was brought to that place. Now, my Heavenly Father, like yours, does not need to show up in some fancy meeting in Bernardsville, right, to interrupt someone's death, right, or some fancy meeting like uptown Manhattan. My God will show up in the worst spot, the most sordid spot, to rescue one of his children, which is exactly what he did for me in 1988. I didn't realize it back then. I just knew I had hit a place of, I don't want to die. And it was the very first time in my life that I didn't want to die. And I didn't realize that until I was in here. And a spirit of willingness was given to me. And on a spirit of willingness is when we begin the spiritual experience. And I reflected upon that in here. I thought for years that my spiritual experience began when I sat down with a sponsor, opened up the big book, and began the journey. Well, maybe for some of us. But if we really reflect and look back, the experience, the spiritual awakening, the spiritual revolution begins with the mustard seed of willingness, and that doesn't necessarily happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. It happens at the bitter end. When we get to the place of experiencing this little much of truth, where God, a book says, what at first seemed to be the flimsy reed proves to be the loving and powerful hand of God. That flimsy reed is truth, and we hold on to it. Some of us do. And at that point is when the beginning of the end starts, and a new life begins. And for me, it was in the back of a hallway. And I made the most sincere plea, maybe as most sincere as I'll ever be in my life, in the back of this hallway. I got to a place where there were no reservations of any kind, no lurking notion anymore. It was truly the bitter end, and I remember thinking, I don't want to die, and I know if I pick up a drink, I may die this time. And I made a plea, if you're out there, please take me from this. And through a series of circumstances, and God had to connect the dots, because I had no power to do that in me at that time, but God had to connect the dots for me and led me to a phone call, which led me to my dad, which led to my dad showing up and me getting into my seventh and God willing last treatment center. And I get into my seventh treatment center, and after 10 days of being in there, what starts galloping back to me? Right? Bill talks about it in the Mayflower Hotel. Starts thinking, got the bar here, got a telephone here. Where do I go? There's women in the bar, there's music, there's liquor, telephone. I don't know. What do I do? Bill was a better man than me. But after being in treatment about 10 days, the insidious insanity of the first drink starts showing up again. It was galloping back and trying to convince me to buy the lie. And it was telling me, Pete, we can do it a little bit different this time. We'll be more careful. We won't drink so much. We'll try other stuff. And I knew I was on shaky ground. And again, God interrupted my death, God, by interrupting my thinking and sent me off to Minnesota. And when I was out there, they disturbed me regularly on the question of alcoholism. But they were giving me truth. Great things happened to me hitting a bottom in 1988. Because when I got here and showed up to the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I once again bottomed out in here. I was running around in Alcoholics Anonymous untreated. I was listening to a lot of contemporary AA. Something deep down in here, spirit, deep down in here, the great reality kept moving me to people who were talking about some sort of solution. But I kept running to these contemporary AA middle of the road solution groups, and they were telling me, put the plug in a jug, don't drink, go to meetings, and do all that kind of stuff. And as a real alcoholic, I want to take the plug out of the jug and get drunk. And if I had the power just to not drink and go to a meeting, why would I have to come to a meeting? I stay home and not drink. Right. So almost 6 months to the day, I'm ready to go pick up a drink again. Completely untreated in Alcoholics Anonymous, experiencing sprees regularly, sex sprees, food sprees, money sprees. I was experiencing all of that in my first 6 months, and going to a meeting and saying, I'm good today, I have 40 days, I'm doing great. And when I would leave the meeting, it was on me again, and I knew I was going to die. I knew something was seriously wrong with me. And then I met some people who were on this path. And they confronted me. They challenged every belief system I came at them with about AA, about my life, about God, about the big book, about the steps, came at me with everything, and they disturbed me regularly. The first gentleman was a guy named Joe T. From St. Paul, and he was going to be my first sponsor. And I showed up to him, to his doorstep, with my dramas of life. God separates me June 23rd, 1988, December 22nd, 1988, knock on his door, and I give him my whole life in about 2 minutes. You know how the newcomers, they call you up, how are you? And you get off the phone 20 minutes later, and that's the only thing you said, right? And I give it to them all. And I'm missing home. I want to get back, and she don't love me anymore. And it was just going on and on. And I'm thinking about drinking. God, if I just get one more down, I'd be okay. And God led me to his house. And he said to me, Peter, where are you with God and the 12 steps? And I said, well, Joe, when do you start the steps? And he says, when you stop throwing up, you're late. And he disturbed me on the question of alcoholism, because what I wanted to hear was, I know how bad it is for you. You really got it tough. Go home and read page 449 of Acceptance and call me tomorrow. Live and let live, let go and let God, turn it over, all this stuff. He didn't do any of that. And in that disturbance, I found some sort of comfort, because he came at me. He was a man with an answer who shouted a message at me. And I certainly wanted what he had to offer. And then he started taking me to some other meetings, and that's where I heard the solution loud and clear. And I stopped going to those other middle of the road places, and God put me on this path. And since that time, my family's been reassembled. A lot of wonderful things have happened within my family. For example, God was never talked about. Now God is talked about. The word love was never mentioned. Not a word's love mentioned regularly. We talk about positive things. We have a family unit. At one time, alcoholism almost severed all of that. So when our book says we found that living in a resentment, how this stuff can be fatal, not only to me, but to anyone I come in contact with, because alcoholism will level everything in its path, but the awakened spirit can touch the lives of others. I read something, and it said something like, the soul which is built upon prayer cannot be hidden, and we don't have to say anything. And we walk with this awakened spirit into our homes, occupations, and affairs, and little by slowly we start to touch the lives of others. And that's not pretentious. That's just the way it is. That's God working in my life and theirs. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I found a tremendous need after 6 months of seeking out people who were doing this. And over the last 18 years, I've been continually doing that. You know, some of us go through the work once, and we hold to that belief system that I'm in 10, 11, and 12, and I can stay there forever. And if that floats your boat, that's okay. I'm not here to dispute that. But if I find myself, if we hear ourselves defending that, then maybe I'm having a little contempt prior to investigation, right? I was one of those guys who got to 10, 11, and 12 and stay there, and then I hit a wall, and now I continually rework the steps. If I have such a wonderful experience going through the steps the first time, why would I deny my spirit that over and over and over again? My sponsor threw out a question to me. He says, did you eat today? And I says, yeah. He says, why you ate yesterday? And then he pressed me as to why I needed to eat. And I gave the obvious answers, because I would get sick, I'd become unhealthy, and eventually I'd die. He says, well, what about the spirit? What are you doing to nourish the spirit? What are you doing to feed the soul? Back to my next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. What am I doing in Alcoholics Anonymous besides getting to meetings? Because you will get to experience, not have to, not need to, not want to, but we get to experience God, and we'll get to find out that it's bigger, AA, God is bigger than this meeting, bigger than Alcoholics Anonymous, bigger than our home group, because we're talking about God. And we get an opportunity to experience that glory in here. I've said this a million times from a podium. My greatest spiritual teachers have been members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've sought out religious people. I made use of what they have to offer. I still do. And I read these inspirational books. I make use of what they have to offer. The greatest teachers I have found have been meet people in Alcoholics Anonymous, men and women in AA, who will fall down drunks like me and then get rocketed. So I continue to seek, and I offered this last time I was up here. I'm no longer a seeker of belief or faith, but I offer you to seek experience. Seek experience. I can talk to you about God. Any one of us can get up here and talk about God. But the only way to truly know what I'm talking about is to have your own experience. To know that we're beyond this, beyond name, beyond form, that we're truly spirit. And the great reality, the power is right down in here. And for so long, I was always looking to reach out there to experience God. And the more I turned in, the more I can go out. And what we'll find out over the next few weeks is how this work will remove. I don't need to acquire anything outside of me. Everything I've been given at birth. It's in a sense, as one of my teachers told me, going home. We're going home when we do this work. Why do I say that? Because what this work will do is continually remove everything that's blocking me from God. The pomp, calamity, the worship of other things, the belief systems, the contempt, you name it, this wedge that's separating, in a sense, me and God will get removed. And we'll find out that God gave us everything at the beginning that we need to walk this journey through life. And what the work does is take a sledgehammer to all the things that are blocking me and remove and remove and remove. It's by removal we wake up, not acquiring things. What I get to is incorporate new people in my life, have relationships, do great things, The more self is in the way, the less God I will get to experience. So self has to go. And it's by removal. And that's what this work will do. Now, when this happens, what happens to a lot of us is we start to get a little uncomfortable. And suddenly my sponsor, who walked on water when I met him, is, you know, being a pain in the neck. Will she leave me alone, right? What changed? Hey, you know who my sponsor is? You know who my sponsor is? It goes like that, right? Usually when we get to the fourth step, right? And it gets incredibly uncomfortable. The reason why it's getting uncomfortable is because self is starting to die and is going to fight for its life. Ego is going to get silenced and it's going to fight for its life. And it feels uncomfortable. But if we know that going in and work with prayer and work with God, He will get me free. And all the things we uncover, discover about ourselves in writing inventory, we need to know it's coming from God. You know, when you're writing inventory and stuff comes to you, you go, where did this come from? How did I remember this? Why am I thinking of this name? Well, guess what? God's delivering. Here's how to get free. This is what's in your way. In a sense, and I don't want to get into the fourth step, in a sense, when we write fourth step inventory, if we follow directions and pray, our fourth step in spirit is perfect because it's coming from the Creator in order to get another one of His children free. And that I can tell you from experience, and countless others can agree with me on that. None of this was I looking to experience, even as far as my fifth treatment center. I got into my fifth treatment center knowing I'm a drunk and addicted to a lot of other things. And part of me wanted help. I had conceded to my innermost self that I was a real alcoholic. I had a handful of treatment centers behind me. I heard about what an alcoholic is. I had AA speakers come into treatment. They told me what an alcoholic is. But there was a greater part of me that wished everyone would get off my back. And I get out of my fifth treatment center after 9 weeks of being put away in this treatment center, and I'm drunk 2 days later. And then I became homeless, and I hit my sixth treatment center, and a day and a half later, I signed myself out, and I was back to the streets again. And so upon the separation, June 23rd, 1980, of alcohol, I was not thinking about doing any of this stuff or seeking God or having this spiritual experience or looking for a sponsor and doing a big book. But something moved me there, and it was God. So I offer this, what one of my teachers said to me and at one of his workshops. Have we not shown up to the big book, to a big book workshop, even to a sponsor, to die? When I first heard that, he disturbed me because it seemed a little radical, a little drastic. But we have. I have. Every time I show up to the work, or the first time I showed up to the work, it's because I'm looking to experience the death of self again. And some of us show up to the work for the first time or the 10th time because the first time is just on us. And the 10th time, maybe we hit a wall and we're experiencing manifestations of self. Page 52 is all over me and I need to get away from this. I can't take it anymore. So I show up to a sponsor with the big book and I'm looking to die once again. Not the death of the physical self, but the death of self. Because in that, I wake up spiritually. I grow up spiritually. And I've gone through the work a whole bunch of times. And many times it's uncomfortable. I sat with Bill. I shared a fifth step with Bill. And I was sober a handful of years. And I know Bill. He's a friend. But on the way to a house, on the way to his house, I had to pull over about six times to pray. Remembering my place. Well, now I'm a student. And I was uncomfortable because I had to share some things that I thought was just so terrible. Bill looked bored most of the time. Great teacher. Great teacher. And then I sit down and I have to go through this work again with my sponsor. And again, student, teacher. And again, I was uncomfortable. And lots of prayer to share this stuff. But I experienced the death of self. And we begin to wake up. To tell you so you know what I'm about, what it was like, what happened, and how I'm trying to be today, one point living on self will run riot, experiencing the spiritual revolution and being brought to where I am now. I grew up driven by 100 forms of fear. I grew up, there was a time growing up where I would actually stutter. I was so driven by fear. There was a time where if you asked me my name, I'd try to think of the right name that you would like so you'd like me. Because God forbid if you didn't, my legs would be taken out from under me. I was so attached to everything external, everything outside of me. And, you know, we sometimes grow up with that stuff. Make the money, get the girl, get the car, get the house, and if you don't, you're less than a man. My mom suffered from this illness. It took her life. About 6 months prior to my first drunk. And I watched this woman get sick, sicker, and finally take her life after a few attempts because the pain of living was too great for her. And that's exactly where alcoholism takes us to. It loves taking us there. A bunch of years later, I was in some flea bag motel, and when Bill says the courage to do battle was not there, it was not there for me either. And I remember swallowing a bottle of pills and washing it down with Jack Daniels and getting back into bed to die. And I remembered at that moment, I knew what my mom had experienced. Because for years, I thought it meant she was weak that she took her life. It was weak because she couldn't stop drinking. And there I am in this flea bag motel looking to cash my chips in. And I realized this has nothing to do with being weak. It has everything to do with being an alcoholic. Because that's where it takes us to. Wants me dead will settle for me drunk. I show up to a street corner on 75th Street and 20th Avenue, experiencing the loss of my mom, experiencing all this fear. Wherever I went, there I was, and was never good. I had a guy at home called Dad who's cunning, baffling, and powerful. Yeah. And I really wanted no part of anything. I would hear teenagers or young adults talk about teenage and young adult things, and I just couldn't even see myself doing some of that stuff. I hear adults talking over dinner about adult things. Buying things and stuff like that. I just could not. This is not for me. I'm not going to make it. Fear had me in its grip. And about 6 months after my mom passed, I'm on the corner and my friends are drinking Colt 45 beer. And they were joyous, happy, and free. I mean, they were having a great time, right? They were roughhousing and talking to the girls and doing a lot of the things that I kind of thought were cool to do if I can only be like them. But I had this judge in my mind that was screaming at me from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to sleep. Oh, what a loser I was. It was obsessive and compulsive, never stopping, relentless, never left me alone for a moment. There were things that happened to me as a young boy that no child should experience, and I walked around with this feeling dirty on the inside because of what was done to me. Until this one Saturday night when my friend said, take a pop off this quart. And I was a little reluctant because my dad had given me many stern warnings about drinking with those guys on the corner. Not to bring any of those girls by this house, if you know what's good for you. And my dad, in my mind's eye, was 6'12". I wasn't even going to blink while he was talking to me, right? My dad's a tough guy. And I'd rather negotiate before we fight. So when he gave me these warnings, I'm going to listen. You know, until this one Saturday night, and the court went around a few times, and I don't know why, but I put my hand in there, and I took a few pops off the court. It went down, and nothing happened to me. I thought for certain my dad was going to turn the corner and jump out of the car and scream my name, and I knew I was in serious trouble. Because all my friends were afraid of him. The older guys were afraid of him, so I had no help. There was no backup. And if he didn't turn the corner, I figured the police would. And I wanted no part of that. But nothing happened. And my friends were there. I was there. And everything was okay. And I drank a little bit more. And I continued to drink and took a few more pops off that quart. And suddenly, happened. I got to that place out there. And I experienced, this is so clear, ease and comfort for the first time. I said, I know who the real alcoholics are. Because all you guys are smiling. Ease and comfort. It was kind of like, something's good. And I was able to look everyone in the eye. The fear started to dissolve. The pain of losing my mom went away. The fear of my dad, the fear of the police, the fear of who I be at that moment, who I thought I'd be at that moment, was removed. And suddenly I was able to pack into the stream of life. And I was having an experience. I was present to the moment. Believe me, I was not thinking about before and later on. I was thinking about, this is great. And as I continued to drink, I was able to finally talk to some of the girls on the corner and roughhouse with the guys. And I became Dirty Harry and Beretta in about 20 minutes. There was a shift in perceptions when my hero went from Mickey Mantle to Keith Richards in a summer. And I went home that night and got up the next morning, and I remembered everything, and I didn't experience blackouts. My clothes weren't soiled. I didn't wake up in a police jail cell or anything like that. I remembered everything, and I went down to the park Sunday morning to play basketball, and there was something different about me. My shoulders were wider. I got my passage into manhood the night before. I had arrived. And I wanted to capture that elusive feeling forever. And I start drinking on Saturdays, and then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and little by slowly it moved into drinking throughout the week, and I start to experience consequences. As Bill said, there were many unhappy scenes in his sumptuous apartment. There were many unhappy scenes in my home. Because I would wait for my dad to go out, and then I'd go out, and I'd come home drunk, and my two kid brothers, who really felt safe and secure around their older brother, started to not feel so safe and secure around their older brother. And they would tell my dad, and he would read me the riot act the next day about what I was doing to my life. And for the emotional appeal, trust me, seldom suffices. It didn't at all. And little by slowly, I start to experience alcoholism. And it manifested in me wanting to drink all the time. And when I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking. When I was drinking, I was thinking about drinking. And there was a separation. The only way now to put it, separation between me and the power of God when my mom died. Because she brought me up telling me God loves me, all things are possible with God. She would take me to my religious community, teach me how to pray, do all these wonderful things. I watched her get sick, sicker, and die, and God and I parted ways. And so I was suffering from three things already. Mental obsession that my mind was going to take me back to that, which is killing me currently also, if I'm not awake. The phenomenon called craving that I was drinking, the craving was always intensified, never satisfied. I'm convinced if, God forbid, I was to pick up a drink now, it'll happen again. And the spiritual malady, this breakdown, if you will, in a relationship between me and God. Did God actually leave me? No. The great reality is deep down within. But the experience, even the belief, stopped. I get to do this a lot, and I speak to many drunks, and I attract a lot of relapses. My sponsor said it's for penance for my last life, but I attract a lot of relapses. And they've been struggling. And I asked them what happened. And they all, you know, stopped making meetings. But behind that, and I think more importantly, was they'd all tell me in their own way that the relationship between them and God stopped. There was nothing going on. And for people like us, what do? We pick up a drink because we're left to self again. And sooner or later, my mind is going to take me back to that which is killing me. And it may show up in a variety of sprees, but behind the spree, if I don't get well, if I don't wake up, I'm picking up a drink. And that's what all these people said. But I picked up a drink at about 14 years old, and I got rocketed. But my family started to experience the hideous four horsemen. My family started to experience alcoholism. And my dad would read me the Rider Act about what I was turning into. And it would go on and on and on. And I got into my first treatment center. And it wasn't any kind of noble act on my part. It was to get the heat off. Because my dad caught me and I didn't want to, you know, experience that. So I went off to treatment with a lot of fake tears. And 28 days later, I got out. And I was right back to the same vicious cycle. Suffer from a threefold illness, spiritual malady. God and I parted ways. I became spiritually blocked, if you will. My mind was taking me back. I pick up a drink. The craving kicks in. I'm done. And I did that after my second treatment center, my third, fourth, and fifth treatment center, and my sixth treatment center. because the progression of alcoholism has no mercy. It didn't with me. I remember after going into my fifth treatment center, my dad got this little apartment for me and fixed it up, this little studio apartment, and fixed it up and made it livable, and was going to get my job back on the waterfront as a longshoreman. I did that for about 23, I did it for too long, actually, about 23 years. Working on a waterfront, longshoreman, it's not exactly a training ground for spiritual growth. It paralleled the Sopranos many times, you know. So they weren't too interested in me, like, getting better. You know. Doing the right thing. It's about as far as it got. But I learned a lot of the in and outs down there and where to get quick money to continue to drunk and where to borrow money to continue to drunk. But they wanted so much back all the time, and I couldn't pay them, and I was in a lot of jackpots, and my dad would get me out of scrape after scrape after scrape, and he was experiencing terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. He's not alcoholic. My family was experiencing that stuff. See, a book says that years of living with an alcoholic will make any wife or child neurotic. The whole family is to some extent ill. They suffer from our alcoholism. They may not be alcoholic. And contemporary A will tell us all I have to do today is not drink and go to a meeting and I'm a winner. And to me, that's arrogant and selfish. It's not what our book talks about. Because there's more to this. And my family was experiencing alcoholism. They're non-alcoholic. And I can't come in here and just say, well, I didn't drink today, so that's enough. I'm a winner. My amends to me and to my family is not picking up a drink. How arrogant and selfish do I want to be? But I take this message and I go back there because I was a tornado roaring through the lives of others on the way in here. And I left damage and debris, and I need to go back and try to repair some of that. And that's what we talk about in our book. That's what God allows us to do. I don't need to do that alone on my own power. God will instill me all the power I need to go repair. And I can come at you experientially about that because it's happened. I've gone back to sordid spots in my life, sordid places in my life, and met some very unsavory characters to make right the wrong. And 9 out of 10 times it worked. A few ex-girlfriends wanted nothing to do with me still, but I made the attempt because God took me there. God gave me the words. God brought me there. Wasn't on my own power. I was living in this little apartment after my fifth treatment center, and I got thrown out of there after a short time because I was, well, not paying rent, almost burned the place down. It turned into the Bowery. I was bringing, like, the Lower East Side into this little place, and there was a landlord upstairs with a little one, a wife, one on the way, working, going to school, trying to make their way, and I hated everything they represented. Because I would come to if I was home on a Sunday in a soiled bed in a filthy apartment, you know, with soil clothes on, and I would hear them in the backyard having their Sunday summer get-togethers. And I hated them. I hated everything that represented. I hated it more because there was a part of me that wanted that, knew I was done. I'll never be able to do stuff like that. To be a human being again, because I had turned into an animal. But God took me from there, wound up in a hallway, sixth treatment center, wound up in another hallway, making sincere plea to God, and I'm here tonight. And I couldn't have planned it better. Because the dots got connected for me, because I certainly didn't have the power to do it. Winding up outside the Port Authority in Manhattan one day when I had this moment of clarity and I knew what I was and I had thought of my family and my mom and a lot of things had passed before me, but was made abundantly clear to me was I'm a drunk and I'm going to die. And then I cursed God and I let God have it. And I even welcomed the idea, as Bill says in his story, I welcomed the idea of dying now because I couldn't do it. The courage to do battle was not there. And I went on a little bit longer, and once again, I was delivered truth. And this time, in the back of a hallway, I says, please take me from this. I didn't want to die. And for years, that's all I wanted to do. 1988, I'm going to the airport. My family's taking me from this place in Long Island to the airport out to Minnesota. And God will connect the dots because I didn't have the power to do it. And little things, these little God stories would happen that I can never plan on my best day. Little moments, little glitches on the radar. Someone would say something. Something would happen, a God story. And on my way onto the plane, I'm completely demoralized. I just came from the streets, 10 days in treatment, out to an airport, onto a plane, and everyone's getting onto the plane, looking like people get onto planes, respectable citizens, and then there's me. I had one piece of luggage that was held together with black electric tape. And I had the clothes on my back, and on the plane I went, and my dad and my kid brother, my youngest brother, took me to the airport. My dad's a strong guy. My kid brother's bigger than him, so they were making sure I didn't decide to find an exit on the way out, get him to the airport. And it was pre-9/11, so you could walk pretty much all the way through. And I remember getting onto that little walkway to get onto the plane, and then something moved me to turn around, look back to my dad and my brother. Now, I was just full of all of this, and I just, get me out of here. But something gave me enough to turn around and look at them. And when I did, I remember this very clearly, my dad fighting back tears and my brother couldn't. And my brother telling me, please get better. And when I got onto the plane, I remember thinking, if you're out there, I'll do anything. Because at that moment, it was made clear to me by a loving God the damage I had done, the damage alcoholism had done, not only to me, but to the innocent people who loved me. The damage I had done. I could not deny it now. I was given, again, this truth, this clarity. I was given sober eyes. And I just looked at, they were pitiful because of what I had done to myself and to them. My youngest brother was losing his oldest brother. My dad was about to lose his son, and they were watching me go down the tubes, and they were hoping that there was this magic potion in Minnesota that was going to bring me back. Because what my dad told me on my way into my 7 treatment center when I met him and collapsed in his arms was this. And he held on to me, and I know he's not that type of guy, but he held on to me and he said to me, I'm not going to lose my son to this. God works through people. It is not only people in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's people. A policeman, a parent, a spouse, whatever it may be. And God gave my dad enough courage, strength, and direction to show up in the most sordid moment in my time. After a plea in the back of a hallway, God gives me this mustard seed of, I need to do something. I need to get in touch with my dad because he's the only one who's going to come get me. My dad comes and gets me and finds me in this condition and tells me I'm not going to lose my son. And what he did, and this is what I try to share when I work with others about them working with others. The compassion we have for another alcoholic. See, my dad could have gotten out of the car like he usually does and I would have head for the hills like the first time. But he got out of the car, and God gave him a spirit to meet me where I am. What came out of the car was a gentle spirit. And my dad, from God, got to meet me where I am. When I work with the drunk, it isn't I'm the teacher and you're the student. I'm the sponsor and you're not. I'll teach. But we meet on common ground. And what I do when I work with others is try to get in there and meet them where they are. And if that, I don't mean to sound pretentious or condescending, like get down to the drunk's level, but get where they are. Do I understand? Do I remember where they are? Because I'll get some tolerance and I'll experience some compassion. I'll remember what that's like and I'll be able to speak to them. It was done by a non-alcoholic in a filthy part of town where my dad gets out of the car and exhibits that. That was God. That was God working in his life and mine. There were no judgments that night. There were no critiques of me. Prior to that, judged and critiqued all the time. None of that went on. None of it. His self and myself were removed from the equation. When I work with drunks, do I get down to where they are? Understand, like a book says, remember they are very ill. I may not like what you're saying. I may not like what you're doing, but I understand. And that allows me to get in and work with you because I have tools to offer. and we can cut away at stuff, and I can get there and experience compassion in the most sordid moment of someone else's life. That's what God does for us in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get reborn and resurrected because we come from where we are. We get here, we wake up, and we go back into the trenches, back on the firing line. We stand at the door and work with others and pull them through. When professionals sometimes are helpless, we get to do that. And I continue to seek this and experience this glory, to give it away in abundance, because my Heavenly Father will continue to fill me to give it away in abundance. Fill me and give it away. But we'll go to contemporary AA, middle of the road solution meetings, where they'll tell you all you have to do today is not drink, and that's the beginning and end of it all. And we deny the glory of God when we do stuff like that, because of the wonderful things that take place in here. I've been moved to have a prayer life. I've been moved to have a meditation, a life of meditation. And with all the falling short that I do, I'm in a place of God not punishing me anymore. I learn. I make amends and move on. And over the last 18 years, I've experienced some incredible challenges. We don't show up to AA, get the book, and hit the lottery, and everything's beautiful. You know, let's go home. People we love die. People we love get sick. Some of us get sick. Some of us lose jobs. Some of us go through, you know, breakups and things like that. I experienced my share of a lifetime for me in about 20 minutes with a handful of years sober, thinking God stopped listening to me. Why did I lose my job, almost have to file bankruptcy, almost lose my house, and going through a divorce in one day? God, here's the script, you know. And I wondered, like, how come God stopped listening to me? A lot of things came out of that besides tremendous growth for me, internal growth, having to turn back to God. But what I woke up to was, through this, was an attachment, a subtle attachment to a belief system. If I do good, I get rewarded, which meant when I do poorly, I'm going to get punished. That was the equation for me. Fear God or love God? What's that look like? Let me just love God. I don't need to fear God. But that was some of the stuff, the threads that were putting what made me, and that had to go. Great things have happened for me. I shared earlier about what it was, you know, what makes me a man, getting all these assignments, and I was given this assignment, my idea of what makes a man. And I immediately wrote down some stuff. Bill emailed me. He says, write this out. And I write out some things of what I think a man ought to be. And they were obvious things. But I knew that was just trying to get the stuff out of the way. And I sit again, and some other things came to me. I thought about it. And then I prayed again. And what came to me, and I'm just so grateful for the assignment, was a tremendous amount of freedom through this. What happens to us when we get to do these disciplines, when we get to be teachable and work and grow in understanding and effectiveness, great amounts of freedom. If you experience freedom, do you want to get freer? And that's where I was at. And what came to me, the last assignment, was no conception of what a man is. Just a spiritual being, carrying a vision of God's will into those activities. Pretty much that was it. Because if I wrote down on paper what makes a man is courageous, does that mean someone who's meek is not a man? I'm already judging. A real man has money. So the person who doesn't, does that make him less than a man? And what happens when I don't have money? Where are these things coming from? From me and my thinking mind. And then Spirit says, let's get this out of the way. You're a spiritual being having a human experience. You're a child of God. That's it. No conceptions. And total freedom. Great things we get to do in AA, and I hope over the next few weeks we disturb you regularly. have some questions and talk about the solution and some neat experiences. This is my life. It has been since I walked in here. I'm not embarrassed to say that this is my life, Alcoholics Anonymous, because with this I get to do a lot of other things, and I wouldn't have it any other way. So thank you. Peace. Questions or, I guess, comments?
Comments. Derogatory.
No derogatory comments. Yes. How do you know you get step one? A book says that we concede to our innermost self. But I can share with you my own experience. I understood step one in here. It was made clear to me what I suffered from. Clear, an obsession, an abnormal reaction to alcohol, the craving, and the spiritual malady. I learned about my mind taking me back to that which is killing me. I learned a lot of things in here. But when I hear that question, I have to go back to how did I get step one was by drinking and winding up in the condition I did with the threefold illness. I didn't have to come in here to get step one. I was experiencing lack of power, choice, and control, and a totally unmanageable life. And when I got here, I was looking for a solution. And when they shared with me what step one is, I understood clearly what I suffer from. The hook was, now that you've really painted me into a corner, I understand what I suffer from. Experientially, I'm coming in here with alcoholism all over me. I drank. Couldn't stop. My mind kept taking me back, and there was something going on in here or nothing going on in here. Now you tell me exactly what I suffer from. You painted me further into a corner, telling me that not that I can't drink, which you'll hear in contemporary AA. Step one tells me I can't drink. Step one tells me I'm going to drink, and I'm not going to be able to stop it. Not going to be able to stop it, stop the starting or start the stopping, right? Now what do I do? You're telling me I'm doomed, that I'm definitely going to drink. I got that based on my track record. I don't get permanent sobriety because I walk into AA. The hook was now I needed a solution. And there better be one in step two. And step two was the solution. And I make a decision in three to get there, and four through nine something happens. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's the best way I can. Okay. In the family afterwards, it says, if years of living with an alcoholic will make any wife or child neurotic, the whole family is to some extent ill. Our book talks about the hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. And people, I'll speak for myself, people who were close to me, family members, experienced all of that. Because alcoholism is that powerful. Yeah. I'm in the treatment center business, and I speak to families all the time. And the condition they're in, and they're not alcoholic.
I was trying to explain, I have a very good girlfriend whose husband is very alcoholic, and she's been for 17 years, and I was trying to explain to her the damage that's been done to the family to mm-hmm. get her to go to Al-Anon on it. And mm-hmm. she said, well, I don't have a problem. You know, it's his yeah. problem.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good quote. I can show you.
just don't work too good. I'm sorry. Can you just say that again?
Say through the through pain we grow. Is that? Do you think that's a continuing process through our sobriety that we reach points where we level up, maybe shape the level up, and then need to grow again?
It's. I don't know about leveling off. There's no end to this. Leveling off is a kind of, I hear, ending. But I can tell you there's been times through this journey for me where I flattened out. I hit a wall. Most recent one, probably maybe 14 years sober, where I just couldn't get past where I was. And we'll experience reemergence of ego. We'll get attached to belief systems in here that we'll start to honor like God. And then we start to use our intellect as God instead of the power that's keeping us sober all along. We start to fall in love with the methodology rather than the power. And I've learned those are, for me, all red flags. That I'm starting to worship other things, emotions. I feel really good, so I don't have to pray. I don't feel so good, I better pray. And I become a worshiper of emotions rather than the power. So our book is clear, not to rest on our laurels, but headed for trouble if we do. So there's always room for growth, and some of us flatten out. Yeah. I don't think God does that, by the way. That's just us. That's that thing called self-will showing up, getting in the way. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay, I got it. I'm sorry. It's kind of like being in a bar, right? When the music's loud and you're drinking and someone says, how are you? No, I just got here, you know, because you can't hear a thing. This don't work too well, so I apologize in advance. It's getting worse. Getting old. You'll be in my first column tonight, inventory. But if I got this right, that there's no alcoholism in your family. So everything's good except you're alcoholic. Uh-huh. Okay. And so am I getting this right? Your dilemma is how do you get tagged with alcoholism? Uh-huh. Okay. My answer would be, instead of asking why, what am I doing about it? You got it. And I can accept what is and no longer experience resistance to truth. And I will get free with that. If I try to bargain with certain things, I may get a little relief from time to time. You know, figuring out my way, I got a solution this time. You know, but if I accept what is, I'll get liberation. What am I going to do about it? What's the solution to it? Show me. Please.
She said she loved your talk.
She said she loved your talk.
I've experienced being depressed. I've experienced anger and fear and greed and lust and joy and a whole gamut of emotions. But depression is something else. And we're talking about clinical depression. That's something that is out of my league. I'm not a professional, obviously. So I can't come at you and say, this is what I did to get out of depression. I've been depressed. No. Do I have been joyful? So I would encourage you then, if you're experiencing that, to seek out a professional and let them offer their remedy for something that may be clinical. I am in the treatment center business, and a lot of people who I run into suffer from something called bipolar. And I had to learn about it and how severe that was. It isn't just something that you can just kind of poo-poo, well, it's bipolar, no big deal. It's life-threatening stuff. And so there's things that people need, maybe medication to take. And if someone does go on medication, let no AA member tell you you're not sober because you're on medication if you're taking it as doctor prescribed. Okay. But I don't experience, I think, the type of depression you're talking about. And again, I apologize for my lack of hearing. It's just, it is what it is. I have a good left ear, bad left ear, and a fair right ear, so. Anyone else? Uh-huh.
How do you ever have a reemergence of self, or are you able to recognize it because of your spiritual path you've been on? Or do you still rely on people in the program to kind of say, hey, you know, self back? Do you experience self ever? Yeah.
That's a great question. Do I still experience self? Absolutely. A couple of things about that, with fear in particular, which is a part of self. Fear would show up, get me, and I was done until it was finished with me, right? And out of the fear would be expressed in anger, irritability, all fear. And through a lot of work, and I did some work with a couple of words, shame and guilt. I did some inventory on that and really went back and uncovered a lot of things. And what that allowed me to do was to, in a sense, hear it coming. I can feel it coming. And I work with the word called immediately. I have been for a while now, immediately. I'll write inventory, I'll make prayer, write inventory, and call up. There's a couple of people I call up with the word immediately and say, I feel this going on right now. I don't know why, I don't know where it's coming from, I have no clue, but I'm starting to feel this. And we walk through that, and I'll do more prayer meditation. So I become greatly aware, words to work with, watch, aware, observe, and turn. There are times where self shows up and I'm in, like with an anger thing. You get angry, blow off the handle into self, into fear, financial insecurity. Self will show up. So there's a part of self still lays around. And that's why we get to write inventory and continually seek this power and be further rid of self. Okay, so it shows up. I was sharing with Dave earlier. I was working for a company, and they promised me a raise for the work I was doing and bringing lots of money to them. And they kept postponing. And finally, when they had to, they says, oh, we don't need you anymore, right? I was in a little bit of self when I got off the phone. Right? But working with these disciplines, and we become that much more aware and less self is involved, and we're in experience with God, it isn't so fear has us anymore. And we understand resentments are futile. And all we're doing is denying what is. And I fail to see God. If I'm in fear, if I'm experiencing anger, at that moment I'm not experiencing God. Watch, aware, turn, observe. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.